Well, let's see if any of you out there have any gumption left or is ticked off about anything or can get ticked off about anything, because this day really has really yanked my crank. Seems to me we get into these days where we don't know as a country what we stand for sometimes, and we certainly don't know as a province what we stand for. Supreme Court today refused to hear the appeal for the extradition of Vito Rizzuto. Now, I know a lot of you guys are going to be saying, you know, America asked for it, our closest ally, Vito Rizzuto. But you know what? Whatever you may think you know, for a country to survive, for a free society to survive, the same standards have to be applied to who we think are the best and the most innocent and who we think are the worst and the most guilty. Same standards. You got to at least hear the appeal. You got to at least hear what somebody has to say. You can't just say, well, okay, you know, we're not going to hear it and we're going to send the guy over. American position has been that this is an extradition request under racketeering. There was some kind of conspiracy to murder under racketeering, and that the racketeering continued because allegedly this citizen of Canada continued to be a member of an organized crime family. Prima facie stuff. No, nothing proven. Supreme Court should have heard this, because the lawyers for this Canadian citizen said, hey, wait a minute, if that's what the Americans are talking about, this is way over 10 years. This is 23 years ago. So at least hear our argument. Bothers me. Should bother Canadians. Also bothers me about something about this province today. And we've gone back to this Hezbollah rally business of 10 days ago. All these brave politicians and labor figures that led this march with hundreds of Hezbollah flags behind them, all of a sudden are boo-hooing and whining because the Israeli ambassador had the temerity to write a letter of protest to the Gilles Duceppe, leader of the Bloc Québécois, and it's perfectly appropriate for an ambassador to write letters to an opposition party leader as well as the government leader. And there's been a whole big to-do about an article that a lady named Barbara Kay wrote saying that, hey, you know what, if Quebec can become separate, and Quebec's political and labor leadership have already marched for Hezbollah, what is that going to mean if Quebec separates? That Hezbollah is not going to be a terrorist organization anymore, as can the Canadian government calls it? And suddenly the intelligentsia of Quebec, the media elite, have pounced on her. Well, you know what? If they have the guts to talk the talk, they've got to take the responsibility for walking the walk. They can't boo-hoo. They can't have it both ways. There's a lot to be ticked off about, and we're going to get on with it right after this break. You can email us at info@iapm.ca. We're privileged tonight to have our first guest, Jeffrey Borow, one of Canada's preeminent criminal lawyers. Jeff, thanks for taking the time to be with us tonight.
Nice to be with you, Barrow.
Jeff, am I wrong? What is it in this refusal by the Supreme Court to hear the position of Vito Rizzuto's lawyers that bothers me? And am I wrong to be bothered? There's something inside of me that says they should have heard it at least.
I think that something inside of you is right, Beryl, because it was an important issue. Under the new Extradition Act, time limits are not even decided by the judge anymore. It's the minister who decides if the crime has been prescribed in the other country. And
let me understand this. So it would be the Minister of Justice.
The Minister himself, under Article 46 of the Extradition Act, is the sole judge as to whether or not the crime is time-barred.
Okay, now, in this case, the American position has been that the only reason it's not time-barred, which would have been 10 years, the alleged offense took place in 1982, is that there was a continuing connection to a certain criminal family, not even criminal acts.
Correct.
Isn't that a bit nebulous for a minister of justice to make a decision and say, okay, I believe the Americans?
That's correct. It is. And it's not something that is not going to show up again. I mean, the minister is called upon many occasions to decide whether or not a certain crime is statute barred in the country that is requesting the person. And so if not for Mr. Rizzuto, for all other Canadians to know exactly where they stand, what are the powers of the minister, what goes into such a decision, and was he right to make that decision to send somebody for a crime that took place some 20 years ago?
I did some just some back-checking on the internal guidelines within justice on a variety of prerogatives that the Minister of Justice has, and the one on extradition sets pretty clearly that if the minister isn't sure, clearly sure, then the courts are to decide it. Now, how could any minister have been clearly sure when all the Americans were saying was not that there was a racketeering conspiracy that was continuing because of specific events that did or didn't happen, but only because supposedly Mr. Rizzuto had supposed relationships with members of a criminal family. So even the Americans aren't alleging specific events that go past the 10 years, merely knowledge of people.
That is correct.
In other words, guilt by association?
Well, there is a crime of being a member of a crime organization, and Canada put that crime on the books after pressure from other governments, especially United States. We didn't have this years ago, and we didn't have money laundering years ago. And
well, pretty hard to prove membership in a criminal organization. They don't carry membership cards.
No, but
so if you don't go to court, how do you know?
Well, because if you have an organization that you're able to prove that the main thrust is to commit crimes, and that organization is three or more people, voila, you have a criminal organization. So, you know, it could be argued at one point in time that certain police organizations are crime organized because they're constantly being brought to court for crimes that they commit. That's how vast and ridiculous the definition is.
Now, this definition is so ludicrous. What does that mean? That if lawyers go out for dinner with some of their clients, and there are more than three of their clients that are suspected of criminal activity, that they become complicit in the criminal association?
Well, if it can
forget
be
about
proved
the lawyer-client that privilege. Let's say you only have that with one of the people at the dinner.
Well, if they could prove that you're participating in the organization and you belong to it, yes.
So this is another. Even this kind of laws, even this kind of acts, are now affected by some kind of perverse idea of statocratic engineering of how we're supposed to behave?
Well,
I want to be friends with a guy who has a rap sheet. Let's say I want to be friends with a guy who's done time for three armed robberies.
Right.
I'm not friends with anybody else but this guy because I like him. I'm not involved with his life. I don't want to know about his life. And suddenly I go to meet with him, and he's got a couple of his buddies at dinner. Now,
well,
am I part of a criminal association?
No, you're not part of a criminal organization, but you're certainly putting yourself in a position that if you met with them on several occasions, that you could end up being certainly investigated, and a case could be brought against you. They have a crime like that in Italy, and that's how they ended up getting a lot of people who were alleged members of the so-called mafia, and ended up some of them getting 15 years in jail in Palermo.
Well, you know, that's bully for them, but we like to hold ourselves to a higher standard, and I think it was Justice William Douglas who said that the means are everything, that it may not matter to many people whether certain criminals, in quotation marks, are caught with means that aren't appropriate. But for a country to have a seat at the table of civilized nations, its means must be appropriate. Does this kind of act, does this kind of legislation not infringe on the liberty that we have as citizens, and of course, the right to the presumption of innocence?
The court has judged that no, because the common good of fighting crime far surpasses the individual's right of association when it comes to criminal activity.
The common good of fighting crime. I sometimes wonder whether public officials know what's good for themselves, never mind anybody else. And sometimes I have a feeling crime is only the definition by one generation that wants to stop the next one from doing what it did before. Jeff Borah, you haven't made me feel any better, but I thank you for your time and for your insights.
You're quite welcome.
Have a great night. Montreal, will be right back. Montreal, we're back. And as I said in our introduction, in this country, sometimes we stand up for what we shouldn't be standing up for, and we don't stand up for what we should be standing up for. And in this province, even when a lot of people get out there and pretend to be very brave in what they believe, they can't take any criticism. Not only can't they take it, they try to shut it up afterwards. We've had a lot of controversy, as I said at the beginning of the hour, over this Hezbollah rally, and it started again. It started again because the Israeli ambassador had criticized Gilles Duceppe. Perfectly appropriate thing for an ambassador to do, by the way, to send a letter to a leader of an opposition party. But a major question in this province has been an article that Montreal journalist Barbara Kay wrote in the National Post called The Rise of Quebecistan. Other countries have had the same kind of articles. We've had the London Stan articles. And the main objection by Quebec civil society that has reared itself on its hind legs is that Barbara Kay had the temerity to suggest that, considering the quality and volume and volubility of Quebec political leaders, both elected and civil society, labor and other groups that showed up at the supposed rally for peace that really turned into a pro-Hezbollah rally, she had the temerity to suggest that in independent Quebec, perhaps Hezbollah would no longer be considered a criminal organization as it is in Canada. And that led to a whole series of repercussions, and we're very proud to have Barbara Kay with us this evening. Barbara, thanks for taking the time to join us.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Barbara, I think, first of all, you should be proud of the fact that Andre Pratt, the editor of La Presse, felt that he had to respond to you almost point by point in the National Post. That you should wear as a red badge of courage.
Well, I guess I should feel triply proud because I've had the editors of Le Devoir chiming in and a few radio stations, and so I guess it's an honor of a kind.
What bothers the critics?
I think what bothers the critics is that I seem to be suggesting, Quebecers would turn into terrorists themselves in an independent Quebec. I do not think my piece has been read closely, and I think that certain words have jumped out at them. So the two constant themes I'm getting is, you think all Quebecers are anti-Semites, you think Quebecers in an independent Quebec would be terrorists.
I know you're much more polite than I am, and in a piece I wrote on the same thing, that's the point that I made on a question of values. What are Quebecers supposed to think when they see André Boisclair and Henri Massé standing in front of a defiled Jewish prayer shawl splashed with blood and splashed with paint?
I was at pains to distinguish between those who become terrorists and those who, by the sin of omission to denounce terrorism, allow it to grow under their feet. That was what I was really trying to say, is that by legitimating the supporters of Hezbollah, by walking together with them, they were really saying there is a moral equivalence between Hezbollah, which we know to be a terrorist organization, and Israel, a sovereign country, defending its security because it was attacked, obviously. So that is not the point they are taking, even though I've now made it in two separate columns.
And very clearly, and they seem to want their cake and eat it too. They, on the one hand, are very upset, and they've gotten journalists into the act too by saying, well, you know, these political leaders didn't really know who was going to be at the rally. You can't control who's going to be at the rally, and so there were some people who pulled Hezbollah flags out. But the point is, of course, I mean, it got me so crazy that I called in a talk show myself this morning and said, well, hey, you know, yeah, you can do something. You can walk away when you see it.
You can't control who's going to be at a rally by what you say before the rally. And I think that they, if they didn't know, they should have known.
Or they didn't know, they didn't want to know.
Well, we can call it ignorance. We can call it naivete. We can call it indifference. We can call it stupidity. I don't know what to call it, but I do know this. It is a politician's job to know if he does A, is it likely to lead to B? So When the organizing committee of a rally excludes an identifiable group from the city and says, you can't be on our committee, is it not reasonable to assume that this event planning committee is not planning in good faith for the so-called peace as the theme?
And that release was sent out everywhere. I know I got copies from three different sources, and that release said, this is a march for Lebanon and Palestine, mm-hmm. and the signatories were a variety of groups, some of them outright Islamist groups under investigation by the federal government. How could, and at the top of this were the names of the politicians who were there. So how could they not have known what would have happened?
They must have known, and moreover, when you lend your name and your credibility as a politician to a partisan group and exclude other groups, you are really saying, well, even though I'm a politician, an elected politician, I don't consider myself to represent all of my province or all of my country. I consider myself a representative of those whose views I have sympathy for. This, to me, is just a terrible, terrible statement for a politician to give.
It's implicit validation of a terrorist group, but more than that, it's an overt demonstration of a transparent hypocrisy. You've got labor leaders that want members. You've got politicians that want votes. Denis Coderre won his riding through the votes of the Muslim community. The labor leaders haven't organized diddly squat in 10 years, and they played a numbers game. And it was clear and obvious to any person who wanted to exercise any of their little gray cells what was going on. And they're now trying to play themselves as innocents.
There's a great deal of hypocrisy around this entire issue. It's the old, we're shocked that you think this. My own impression is that Quebecers are willing to accept a certain amount of criticism if it comes from within their own family, so to speak. When somebody from outside, and I think the fact that I was writing in a national newspaper, not, say, the Gazette,
right.
Seems to put everybody so on the defensive that they are not willing to argue my case. It becomes very much an ad hominem, you hate us, you are accusing us, instead of saying, well, what are you actually saying, and let's discuss the point.
Yeah, if you want to stand up for something, at least stand up for it. Don't whine about it later. Barbara, stay with us. We're just going to take a short break and be right back.
Okay.
Montreal, we're back with Barbara Kay. Barbara, you mentioned before the break that a lot of your critics took it as an ad hominem attack instead of dealing with the specific issues. Well, a lot of the discussion at the rally and after the rally has been about Quebec values and what they value. And one thing I've taken these people to task for is I've asked some of these guys, well, what do you value? You value a terrorist organization that doesn't want gay rights? You value a terrorist organization that puts women to death if they have affairs? Is that the kind
point.
Of things
That's,
you value? Is that Quebec
as
value?
I was talking about before, Quebecers have a very, you know, they have this image of themselves as we, and many of my 300 emails said, we are the most open, tolerant society in the world.
Yeah, they're very big on
these
that.
Things? And they do not want to hear the results, say, of polls that show that while 26% of Canadians in Quebec think Jews have too much power compared to 10% outside Quebec, or that Quebecers with a high school education or less, 20% of them believe Jews have too much power. I mean, there's a whole bunch of statistics.
Yes.
The fact is that there is a certain amount of anti-Semitism in Quebec, but when you mention this, it just goes against the image that Quebecers have of themselves, and they just go ballistic.
And there's also two other important points that you brought up in your article. There's this knee-jerk anti-Americanism in Quebec that ipso facto makes any ally of America some kind of devil.
Right.
And there's a jealousy of any group or nation, particularly small ones, that have actually achieved success and power, such as Israel. It's almost a threat to Quebecers' image of themselves.
Well, I think there's a great deal of complexity in Quebec's mental obsession with Israel, because here you have a small country that achieved its independence and revived its ancient language without the need for Bill 101, and you know that has achieved everything, in fact, that Quebecers would like to see for themselves. And they did it. They did it without seeming to need anybody else to help them. So I think I agree with you. I think there's a real tug of war mentally, a kind of admiration at the bottom, but a kind of bitterness too. So
it's ironic to think back to 1960. In 1960, the beginning of the Revolution Tranquille, fellow named Marcel Chapet put out the first serious book on independence called La Guide des Patriotes. And he used Israel as the model for Quebec. Well, we've come a long way from that, haven't we?
We sure have. I am no psychologist, but I do know ambivalence when I see it. I think they would like to cling to this idea that we're just criticizing Israel. It's not anti-Jewish to criticize Israel. I think we should just get rid of that old card.
You know, they like to think. They want to have their cake and eat it too. Self-determination for the people of Quebec, no self-determination for the people of Israel. It's the old, there was the famous line from Clermont-Tonnerre during the French Revolution, right after the French Revolution. À les Juifs comme des individus, tous, to the Jews as individuals, everything. À les Juifs comme un peuple, rien. To the Jews as a people, nothing.
Exactly. And don't forget, too, you've got
200 years of this.
It's a quite left-wing province. And it's also a province that sees itself still as a kind of, they can't really say oppressed anymore, but they still see themselves as this colonial, this vestige of colonial times. They still see English Canada a little bit as imperialist in its attitude. And there's a tendency to identify with groups in the world who also see themselves as oppressed by imperialist powers. And because the United States and Israel are so closely identified, Israel has become now this mighty imperialist power,
and
automatically
also
is considered the bad guy.
And the amazing thing is that in Quebec, nobody sees the rich Arab states who've kept Palestinians in indentured slavery, have given less money than Israel has to their reconstruction of their own state, which was recognized by Israel in 1948. They don't see those states, those dynasties and tyrannies, as being imperialist. They somehow think that that's okay. They're a developing culture. They have a right to be wrong.
They have a very romanticized picture of the other with a big capital O.
You see, I told you you're more polite than I am. I don't see it as romanticized at all.
You know what,
I think they're jealous little twerps.
Yeah, well, I said to... Well, I'm not going to say that.
I just said it. I don't expect you to. You're a lady. I don't have to be. I don't have to be as polite as a lady.
See today, and... he said, why is this that we can't criticize Israel, and why couldn't we have this march? It was just for peace. I said, you tell me something. For the past 30 years, this poor little country, Lebanon, has been torn to shreds in civil wars, by the Palestinians, by Syria, you name it. As long as it's between Muslims, I didn't see Quebec out in the streets, demonstrating for peace. And believe me, the casualties in the last 30 years have made this war look like nothing. So where were all you Quebecers during those 30 years when it was only Muslims that were,
Where were they when Russia even was putting down Chechnya? Where were they when NATO was bombing Kosovo?
How come the minute Israel gets into it, suddenly there's all this heartbreaking stories?
It's like a moral resort area for Quebec.
Yeah, I mean, look, should we feel bad that Israel builds bomb shelters for the citizens so they don't reach the level of casualties that would up sympathy?
No, it's obviously Israel's fault that the Lebanese government has failed its own people. That must be some plot by Israel to undermine the Lebanese.
Anyways, I think we're on the same page in general.
Have any of your critics...
My problem has been to explain myself in a way that I'm being understood as not saying Quebec itself would be terrorist, but that it has already... Those politicians, when they marched in that demonstration, were exhibiting a spirit of appeasement that is a danger signal because it indicates that they'll look the other way when certain hateful expressions are imposing themselves on a civil society. And if they're willing to tolerate expressions of hate this early in the game, I do wonder, in an independent Quebec, how far that tolerance would go.
Barbara, I want to thank you for being with us, but I want you to our listeners to hear this well from Barbara Kay's piece, The Rise of Quebecistan. Complacent Canadians think it can't happen here. It won't if our political class takes its cues from the principal Stephen Harper, rather than the shameless Quebec politicians who led the pro-terrorist rally. Harper needs votes in Quebec every bit as much as Mrs. Duceppe and Boisclair if he expects to achieve a majority government in the next federal election. But unlike them, he isn't willing to sell his soul. The devil is always on the lookout for the moral relativism that signals the latter-day Faust. He may have found some eager recruits among Quebec's most prominent people. Barbara Kay, thank you for those words, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good night.
Okay, good night, Beryl.
Montreal, we'll be right back.
Okay.
Or email us at info@iapm.ca. Well, Barbara Kay raised troubling points. What is it about the message of the terrorist that seems to resonate with so much of Quebec civil society? Our next guest, Dr. Mordecai Kadar, will be able to shed some light on that. Before we get to Dr. Kadar, Carol from NDG, good evening.
Good evening, Beryl. I just want to make this very fast. I couldn't resist congratulating Mrs. Barbara. The way she talks, it seems to me more of a prophecy, because I had a bad vision 2 years ago. And the way they're acting here in Quebec, the separatists, pro-Hezbollah, pro-this, pro-that, anti-American, anti-Semitist, to me, it has all the symptoms of a very, very, the very first time...
Bad vibes.
...of a Nazi Germany.
Well,
That's how it started.
Let's not go that far, but it's bad vibes. It's a little bit of le noir sur.
Yeah, but we don't want to wait till it gets to this.
Carol, we won't, and with, you know, there's enough of us at the barricades to make sure it won't. Thanks very much. Steve from NDG.
Hello.
Steve.
Yeah.
Got to speak up a bit.
Yeah, sorry. You know what? I think you guys have totally misconstrued why Quebec is the way it is. You know, I think Quebec admires countries that don't constantly have to use force or violence to either survive or get their way. And that's why right now they're extremely anti-Bush, not anti-American, because of the Iraq war. We didn't like the fact.
Well, like you mean Quebec admires Arab nations that do make war on their neighbors constantly? Quebec admires Arab nations that not only tried to eliminate Israel but tried to eliminate each other?
Well, you know, I don't think Quebec admires Arab nations. What they don't like to see is one nation having two of their soldiers kidnapped in a border skirmish and then deciding...
Well, yeah, but that's selective facts, Steve. Tell me, does Quebec admire the fact that Israel took 1,000 Qassam rocket attacks, had the city of Sderot destroyed, had Katusha rockets launched against it at the same time that the soldiers were kidnapped? And what is it supposed to do? It wasn't just the soldiers, Steve. If it was just the soldiers, it would be a different discussion. Steve, I've got to cut you short. We got Dr. Kadar waiting, but I thank you for your call.
Okay.
Mordecai Kadar teaches at Bar-Ilan University. He is an expert in Arabic and Muslim studies, Arab radicalism. He's a member of three important research groups, including one that studies dealing with radical Islam and another at the Jerusalem Institute for Israel Studies at Hebrew University on Muslim minorities in Western countries, and is the author of Assad, In Search of Legitimacy, Messages and Rhetoric in the Syrian Press under Hafiz and Bashar. Dr. Mordecai Kadar, welcome.
Good evening. Just a little correction. I'm in Bar-Ilan University.
I thought I said that. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Dr. Kadar, what is it about radical Islam movements that resonates in many quarters, not just in Quebec, as we've been discussing, but in many parts of the West?
Well, the nature of Islam is something which we in the West sometimes ignore. While Judaism, Christianity, and other religions are meant to coexist near each other, Islam, in its own view, is meant to replace the other religions. Means if any religion has any sacred place like Jerusalem or other places, and this religion lost its legitimacy like Judaism and Christianity, naturally Islam is the inheritor.
So an example of this would be the Taliban in Afghanistan blowing up the Buddha statues.
Well, the same thing. Since other religions have no legitimacy, since Islam came to the world around 1400 years ago, today Islam is the only legitimate religion, and it can do whatever it likes with the others. since others lost all the rights.
So that would indicate that there can be no middle ground. How do political jurisdictions like Quebec, that like to think of themselves as liberal, having a great joie de vivre, a great freedom, how can they not see past the terrorist line, the radical Islamic line? Why is what is it in the radical Islamist propaganda that they've learned to push buttons on that resonates with supposed progressives?
Because many Muslims today talk in the language which the West likes to hear, like peace and, you know, resolution to all the problems, while they talk in one side and mean other side as well. And this is the double talking from those people, and many in the West are falling into this trap and think that if they say that they want peace, they want peace. All what they want is a time to rearrange, if they had some problem, to arrange their ranks and to come out with another campaign against the infidels, which Jews, Christians, Buddhists, Shintoists, everybody comes into this framework of infidels.
Playing for time. Dr. Kadar, stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. Or email us at info@iapm.ca, and we're talking to Dr. Mordechai Kadar, specialist in Arabic and Islamic studies at Bar-Ilan University in Israel. Dr. Kadar, you were saying before the break that radical Islamists are very good at playing for time, adjusting their message to so-called progressive audiences in the West. And, of course, they back it up with all these pictures of suffering. But they're suffering on both sides. What makes it, other than, is it just a spirit of appeasement, as Barbara Kay said, that makes progressive forces in the West fall victim to this, sort of saying, well, look, anything for peace, you know, yeah, we want democracy, we want freedom, but not in a, you know, we're not willing to pay a price for it. So as long as you be good, we'll be good. Has it come down to that again?
Definitely. They play on time, and they are playing to the hands of those who are willing to see them as normal people or people who think like Westerners, while they think in totally different way. And their terms of, let's say, time are totally different because, look, we are talking about terms of 4 years, 5 years as something which we might invest in getting something through this period. Muslims think in terms of 100 years, 200, 300, they have time. In the Quran says that, in Allah al-ma'a sabirin, means God is with those who have patience. And they have a lot of patience. So they will...
So if they have a lot of patience, when we hear, whether it's Sunni or Shiite, or whether it's Ahmadinejad in Iran, when we hear them talking about the restoration of 14th century Islamic hegemony, when we hear them talking about the restoration of paving the way for the hidden Imam Hassan Ali, we have to take them at their word. They think in centuries.
Look, they are waiting for the absent Mahdi for almost 1400 years, the Shi'is, and so they can wait for another 100 years. Meanwhile, they are paving the way for him to come and to solve all the problems and to bring salvation to the Shi'is and to make them the masters of the Islamic world in the first stage and then the whole world in the second stage. And this is what they say. So even if it doesn't occur today, in 10 years, 100 years, 200 years, let it happen whenever it comes, whenever Allah agrees to do this. Because, again, Allah is with those who have patience. And we have to read this. We have no time. We want to have everything instant. And this culture of instant, which now is the main culture in the West.
We can't wait. We can't wait anymore to see what's really happening.
Now. We want everything now.
Mordechai Kadar, let me ask you very quickly a bit of a vision or a bit of a prophecy. Is the West as weak today as it was in 1938 when after Munich, after they had ceded Sudetenland to Hitler, England and France actually encouraged President Beneš of the Czech Republic, arguably the most liberal humanist government around, to give anything he wanted to Germany and almost aided Germany in painting Beneš as the provocateur, allowing the Nazis to raise another million troops. Is the West that weak? Has the decline been that bad now in political will?
I'll tell you what, the source of weakness in the West is the notion of human rights. And I'm not against human rights, but what I want to draw your attention to something which happened in early 1979.
Very briefly, Dr. Kadar. Sorry, we're getting pressed on the clock.
When 1979, when the big riots in Tehran against the Shah started, and the big demonstrations in the streets started, he wanted to shoot into those demonstrations. President Carter, United States of America, called him and told him specifically, you don't shoot at demonstrators. So when those who went out of the streets saw that the Shah cannot do anything because the American president tied his hands...
They took it as a sign of weakness.
They took it as a weakness, and those demonstrations came more and more and more until he had to run away. And this is what made Khomeini come back from Iraq and take Tehran and establish the Islamic or the Shi'i empire in Tehran. And now we are facing maybe Iran, which is going on a nuclear weapon, only because the president of the United States of America prevented the Shah from shooting at those demonstrations at the beginning.
Mordechai Kadar, we thank you very much for illustrating an important lesson of Churchill's. An appeaser is someone who feeds the crocodile, hoping he'll eat him last. Mordechai Kadar, thank you very much. Thank you, Torin Master Control. We'll be back with you Monday night. Thank you, Montreal.